Hello, and welcome to Anaphylaxis UK's Let's Talk About Allergies podcast, where we provide expert answers to common questions about allergies and anaphylaxis. Our goal is to offer valuable insights on how we can all work together to make life easier and safer for those living with allergies. Welcome back to our Anaphylaxis Awareness Week series. This week, we're focusing on our theme, the hidden battle with allergies, shining a light on the emotional challenges that often accompany allergies. It's important to remember that while we've made significant strides in understanding allergies and anaphylaxis over the years, addressing the mental health aspects is equally important. Join us as we explore these hidden battles and empower ourselves and our loved ones to navigate the emotional landscape of living with serious allergies. In this episode, we revisit our CEO Simon Williams' conversation with Professor Rebecca Nibb from last year. As a professor of health psychology, Professor Nibb explores the psychological pressures individuals with allergies face and the progress made so far in recognising their mental health needs. She emphasises the importance of accessible psychological support for those feeling anxious about their allergies.
Hello!
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Simon.
Rebecca Nibb, you're super well qualified in talking to me today about psychological pressures, the anxiety and all of the concerns that people have living with an allergy. And I was looking at all of your qualifications and, oh my goodness, a degree in psychology. I've got to read it out. A degree in psychology, master's in criminology, PhD in psychology, an MSc with distinction in cognitive behavioral therapy.
That's it.
That is brilliant.
I've been busy.
So what motivated you to get so involved and so passionate about allergies?
Well, I think it all started about 25 years ago. I was looking for a job and applied for a post at Birmingham University to run a research project, which was looking at why people think they have a food allergy or a food intolerance. And at that time, I knew absolutely nothing about it. And I was offered the job, and that it got me hooked. So I think, you know, back then, back in the sort of mid-1990s, very few people had heard about allergy. Few had heard about intolerance. Nobody was looking at psychological aspects of it. And after I finished that research, running that piece of research, and I did my PhD on that as well, I was asked by a few clinicians to do some further work. And I started to work with the clinicians down in Southampton. So Jonathan Hurahane, who's now over in Ireland, and a fabulous research nurse called Rosie King, who's now retired, but she was amazing. And we did a project looking at families with peanut allergy. And that really then got me hooked. And I started going to the British allergy conferences, and I was the only psychologist there. And I thought, we really need to do something about this. And so for the next 25 years, that's what I've been trying to do.
That's great. And you've done an awful lot of research, published research, I saw as well, and currently undertaking research as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we run quite a lot of projects. Some of them we run with our master students, some we run big funded projects, and we're running quite a few sort of national and global ones at the moment.
What people often ask us is how they can get involved in some of these studies. Is there a kind of a one door they can open to get into, you know, sharing their experience and what happens to them as part of the work that you do?
I think it would be great if we had a register of people who would be interested in research. That'd be marvellous for us. What we usually do is advertise. So when we have a study and we're wanting a particular type of participant, so we might want people with allergy, or we might want people with celiac disease or intolerance, we might just want parents, we might want adults, we usually then advertise. And the Anaphylaxis UK and Allergy UK are fabulous in advertising for us. We've also advertised through Celiac UK as well. So I think the main thing, if people really want to get involved, is to look out for those adverts coming out. Check your websites. Get on Facebook, on your Facebook pages and your Twitter pages, because that's where we tend to send things out and advertise that way. We also advertise through our own Twitter pages as well. So I have quite a big following on Twitter, and so do some of my colleagues, and particularly some of the clinicians have a huge following on Twitter, and we'll advertise through there as well. So if you're interested, you can follow some of the clinicians and the researchers in the area who will tweet some of those adverts and updates on some of the research they're doing.
So you'll have to share your Twitter handle now.
Yeah.
Why is it?
No, mine's RebeccaNib83, I think. No, 81. Oh, crikey.
We'll put it in the comments underneath the video.
I think it's 81. RebeccaNib81 at, yeah. But yes. But if you just search for my name, it'll come up.
We're certainly at Anaphylaxis UK looking at ways that people can get involved in research, because very often people just want to give back and share their experience, but also I think it gives just a bit of hope that something is being done. You know, you made reference there to 20 odd years ago. I'm not convinced that still that many people take it seriously and also don't appreciate what anxiety and the kind of psychological effects it has on people with an allergy. And I just wonder how have you seen it evolve over the years, and whether we're not quite there yet, but are we nearly there?
We are certainly getting there. I've seen a huge change over the years. I think when I first started going to the British Allergy Conference, BSACI conference, I was the only psychologist there and I had a little poster. That was it. Now, when you go to that conference, we have a whole range of psychologists there speaking, giving invited talks about their research. And so I think the clinicians who are working within the allergy clinics are very much aware of how important psychology is. And that's a huge step. I think that in primary care, we still have a struggle. I hear stories, even in the research we're doing at the moment, talking to parents and adults about their experiences with primary and secondary care and trying to get referred to see a psychologist, and finding that within primary care, they're still being dismissed. The anxiety around food allergy is still not being taken seriously. And I know that that's not across the board. I know that's not every GP. And there are some absolutely fabulous GPs who do a lot of work within allergy and have a special interest. But I think there's still a lot of knowledge gaps within primary care, even down to how you use an adrenaline auto-injector. You know, they're not being shown the correct way of doing that. So I think we still have a lot of work to do there. And then, of course, the other area is that we don't have many psychologists working within allergy, within secondary care. So it can sometimes be very difficult to get referred to a psychologist because they're just there aren't any psychologists working in that area, or they don't know anything about food allergy.
And that referral route usually is via the GP. So somebody would need to make an appointment with their GP and get referred on to a psychotherapy service.
No, usually they would be referred by their allergy clinician in the hospital, because that's where the psychologist will be working in a hospital setting. So in some hospitals, like the one down in Southampton and in London, in Manchester, Newcastle, they're really lucky to have psychologists who have some dedicated time for working within the allergy services and working with the allergy clinics. But a national survey we've done recently shows that any psychologist working with allergy, on average, they only get about 6 hours a week, on average, across the country. And it's very different between the north and the south. So there just aren't the services there to refer to. If you ask your GP, they might not have anybody to refer to, because really your only referral mechanism is through sort of perhaps community mental health services and those sorts of things. So it can be quite difficult. And then obviously your other route is to find someone privately and pay privately, but that's really expensive. And that is probably one of the biggest barriers. So another study we're doing at the minute looking at barriers is, even in the UK, cost is a barrier to seeing a psychologist, because if you can't get referred through a hospital, you have to pay privately.
And I think, you know, there are just so many barriers, aren't there, for people, that the barrier that then a referral to a clinic to start with, a wait then presumably for the other services to be initiated and so on and so forth. And you're quite right, you know, we have it all the time. And actually, it's, you know, GPs are not alone in this. We work in an awful lot with restaurants, for example, and, you know, trying to, there are many, many good ones. There are some brilliant ones, but there are many people then think, oh, okay, we've got a customer here who's a bit fussy, you know, not taking it seriously. But if we can't convince GPs to take it seriously, we really do have a challenge with everybody else, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
But apart from going private, are there other tools and online, the magic of the internet, are there things that people can do? Are there things that people should avoid?
We're working really hard to try and develop some tools that people will be able to use online. We have some funding for our GAP study. So GAPS is Global Access to Psychological Support for Food Allergy. So it's a bit of a mouthful, which is why we call it GAPS. And we are currently, we've conducted a survey looking at the need for psychological services across about 20 countries. And then we're currently doing interviews to try and find out a little bit more information about how people have interacted with healthcare services, what their experience has been, and if they've seen a psychologist, what that experience has been. And our final phase is to try and develop some online tools that adults and parents will be able to access. So if they're feeling anxious about a particular thing, they'll be able to access some tools. So hopefully that's going to be piloted this year. But in terms of what people can access now, I would very much tell people to go and have a look at your website, because you have a huge number of really good information sheets, fact sheets. You've got, I know that other psychologists like Dr. Christina Jones has been working with you as well to develop things like anxiety information sheets. And because they're tailored to allergy, they're the best, that's the best place to go. Because I think if you try and access some general information about anxiety, it's not tailored to allergy. And so it's not as, maybe it will be useful, but maybe not as useful. So at the moment, I'd say, you know, if you're really concerned and you're really anxious and it's stopping you doing lots of things, please try and get referred. But in the meantime, definitely go and have a look at what you have on your website, because you've got some fantastic resources there.
Also, if people are looking at this on our YouTube channel, I've got a video with the equally brilliant Chrissy as well, and we touched on many of these same sort of issues. But talk me through the kind of experience that somebody might have with if they wanted to do cognitive behavioral therapy. I hear a lot about it. I spoke with Chrissy about it. What is it? What does it do? The short term was it rewires the brain, and whether all, you know, these things are the right things to think about, you know, that you have got a different attitude or you're able to manage. Is that right? Is that right? Have I got that right?
Yeah, sort of. I think CBT focuses on our thoughts, our feelings, our behaviours, and any physiology. So, you know, if we get stressed, we might feel sick, or we might get tense, or, you know, so those sorts of symptoms. And it's very much focused on how we think about something has an impact on how we behave, and that has an impact on how we feel about it, and how and our feelings have an impact on then how we behave and then how we think about it. So they're all, you know, interlinked. And what CBT focuses on is if somebody's not coping, or their coping mechanisms have just broken down and they can't deal with a particular difficulty, it looks at how they're thinking about that particular factor, how they're behaving, what their emotions are. And we look at trying to help people to think about things in a slightly different way and do things in a slightly different way. And then that can help reduce anxiety. So, for example, if somebody is avoiding doing lots of things because of their allergy, or their child's allergy, they're avoiding going out to eat, for example, because they're far too anxious about what might happen. But they would really love to go out to eat. So we help them think about, well, how can we think about that in a different way? What are the risk assessments you can do? What are the behaviours you can do that will reduce your anxiety? And quite often, the only way of reducing anxiety is doing the thing we're avoiding, which is really hard. People don't like doing things that make them anxious. But we know that if you do things that make you anxious, those anxiety levels can start to go down. So CBT tries to focus on those sorts of things. And there's a huge array of different things we can do within CBT to help people with various things. So it isn't just general anxiety, but it might be something more specific, such as needle phobia. I don't want to think about having to inject myself with adrenaline mm-hmm. because I've got a phobia of needles. So mm-hmm. CBT can help with that. Or it can help people with if they have to go in and do a food challenge and they're very anxious about that, it can help with that. So there's lots of different things that CBT can help with. And because it has a really good evidence base for anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, all of those sorts of things, it's not surprising then that it does help with allergies because they're all the sorts of emotions that are connected with allergies as well.
And are there kind of a fixed program of activities? Are there a fixed number, or does it depend on how somebody's behaviour then, I wouldn't say improves, but they're able to manage things better?
We try and tailor, CBT should be tailored to the individual, but there are things we know that work for certain difficulties. So for certain anxieties and phobias, we know that there are certain techniques that work, but we will tailor those to the individual and we will go at the individual's pace to, you know, as they improve. And so it can for some people be really, you know, a really quick, they only need, you know, two or three sessions or even maybe just one session.
Oh, really?
And they can see some improvements. And it all depends on, I guess, you know, how high the anxiety is or how extreme the things are that this person is trying to cope with. And if there are multiple things as well, it can take a little bit longer. But I know some of the clinics do like a triage. So for some people, just a telephone call or come in and do a group workshop, that really helps. For other people, they need some one-to-one work over a number of weeks in order to help them.
That's right. Yeah, we were talking about group sessions and also online as well. I think there are some online tools out there that are very effective and helpful. And I think we've got those links again in the on the Chris Jones video and in the comments under that section. But yes, certainly, I think you know, we just need to explore these areas a lot more. And make them more accessible for people. It's certainly something, you know, that we at the charity is very concerned about. And, you know, that appreciation that people are worried about going to restaurants. They are, you know, concerned about their children going to schools. And, you know, what can we do? So our fantastic Safer Schools program, for example, helps to make sure that all the staff in the school are trained up, so again it provides that safety mechanism. We've got class plans and assembly plans and all sorts of other things, but also working with some of the major restaurant chains to make sure that they're doing the right thing, and then seeing how we can work with, you know, pubs and smaller restaurants and takeaways. So again, you know, that area of risk that people might be concerned about, quite rightly, is less. You know, so but I think with the tools that they might have to be able to manage things themselves, in addition, I hope to, you know, all of the work that we're doing on the information sheets and arming people with that knowledge helps improve things. But the thing is, with these videos, you see, they we could chat forever, but time flies. So we're going to have another call, I think, and delve into this even deeper.
Yeah.
Would you be up for that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Anytime.
Well, that's super. It's been really good to speak to you. We'll put your Twitter handle on the so look out for that, folks. The and follow Rebecca on Twitter. And then when did you say that pilot is getting started?
We have a just to give a plug for a number of things that are going to come out.
Yeah, please do.
In the next few months, the pilot for developing some sort of self-help online materials, we're hoping that we'll start advertising for people to help with that, probably sort of April, May this year, once we finish all of our interviews and I've got all of our information about what we need to do. We'll need people to help develop those online materials. So we'll be advertising for that. But in the next few weeks, we'll also be advertising for people, any parent of a child with food allergy, food intolerance or celiac disease, and any adult with those conditions. I'm working with the Food Standards Agency at the moment, and we are going to be putting out a survey for anybody who's had a reaction to food in the last 5 years. We want to know about it. So we're asking, you know, where it happened, how it happened, what food it was, etc. So this is really going to help the Food Standards Agency to think about policy in terms, particularly in terms of allergen labelling, and whether restaurants in particular and other food businesses are needing some extra support if they're not labelling things properly or not understanding somebody's concerns regarding their food hypersensitivity and that person has a reaction. So anybody who's had a reaction, but also anybody who's had a near miss. So, you know, they were given a food and they realized before they ate it that it had peanut in it, for example, even though they'd told somebody, mm-hmm. I'm allergic to peanuts. So we're interested in the last 5 years, have you had a near miss or have you had a reaction? So those adverts will be coming out very, very soon. So if people are interested in that, please do take part. It's going to be a nationwide survey.
That sounds amazing. And so, you know, take it as a given, we can help with this and send us all the details if we don't have them already, and we'll put them on the website to get folk involved. How many people are you looking for?
As many as possible. I mean, really, you know, we're talking thousands. So this is
follow-up. I'm sure we can do that.
Yeah. I mean, you advertised our food sensitive study for us, which we're just publishing now, and thousands of people took part in that, literally. So, yeah, that was a great response. So we're hoping for the similar.
Always happy to help.
Thank you.
If you're watching this and you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, please do, or you know, follow us on all the usual social media channels. But so we'll get all of that information out. But generally, any service that we, you know, we want to support, we'll blow the trumpet and wave the flag.
Brilliant. Thank you, Simon.
Great. Lovely to speak to you.
Thank you for listening. We hope you found the discussion helpful and that it resonated with your experiences of managing the emotional impact of allergies. Next week, we'll be continuing our theme, The Hidden Battle with Allergies, with a new episode featuring Professor Chrissy Jones. Together, we can raise awareness and offer support for those facing these often overlooked challenges. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, you can subscribe to our podcast on your favourite podcast app, including Spotify and Apple Music. Finally, be sure to follow us on social media at Anaphylaxis UK to join in the conversation, and let us know if there are any questions you would like us to answer next time.